Both pairs from Districts 1 and 2 had made for the hole blown open near the entrance. The District 1 kids had been shot dead. The girl from 2 had made it to the river and leaped over the wall, only to die in the fall. And Marcus had disappeared completely, leaving a desperate, dangerous, powerful boy loose somewhere in the city. A displaced manhole cover suggested that he might have climbed underground to the transfer, the network of tracks and roadways built under the Capitol. But no one knew for sure.
"I suppose they see the arena as a symbol," said the grand mam, "just as they did during the war. The worst part is that it took almost 20 seconds before they cut the transmission to the districts, so no doubt it was a cause for celebration. Beasts that they are."
"But they say hardly anyone in the district saw it, grand mam," Tigress countered. "The people there don't like to watch the Hunger Games coverage."
"It will only take a handful to get the word out," said the grand mam. "It's just the kind of story that catches fire."
The doctor who'd talked to Coriolanus after the snake attack entered, introducing himself as Dr. Wayne. He sent Tigress and the grand mam home and gave Coriolanus a quick checkup, explaining the nature of the concussion, fairly mild, and the burns, which were responding well to treatment. It would take some time to heal completely, but if he behaved himself and continued to improve, he'd be released in a couple of days. "Do you know how my tribute is doing? Her hands were burned rather badly," said Coriolanus. Each time he thought of her, he felt a stab of uneasiness, but then the morphling would wrap around it like cotton wool.
"I wouldn't know," said the doctor, "but they've got a top-notch veterinarian over there. I expect she'll be fine by the time they've got the games up and running. But that's not your concern, young man. Your concern is to get well, and for that, you need some sleep."
Coriolanus was happy to oblige. He slipped back into sleep and didn't fully come to until Monday morning. With his aching head and battered body, he felt in no rush to leave the hospital. The air conditioning eased the burns on his skin, and generous portions of bland food appeared regularly. He caught up on the news on the large screen television while he sipped as much fizzy lemon drink as he could hold. A double funeral was to be held for the Ring twins the following day. The manhunt for Marcus continued. Both the capital and the districts were under heightened security. 3 mentors dead, 3 hospitalized, really 4 if you counted Clemencia, 6 tributes dead, 1 escaped, several wounded. If Dr. Gall wanted a makeover for the Hunger Games, she'd gotten it. In the afternoon, the parade of visitors began with Festus sporting a sling on his arm and a few stitches where a shard of metal had sliced his cheek. He said that the academy had canceled classes, but the students were supposed to show up the next morning for the Ring's funeral. He choked up at the mention of the twins, and Coriolanus wondered if he would have a more emotional response himself once they removed the morphling drip, which muted both pain and joy. Citeria popped in with some bakery cookies, relayed the well wishes of the faculty, and told him that while the incident was unfortunate, it could only improve his chances for a prize. After a bit, an uninjured Sejanus appeared with Coriolanus's book bag from the van and a stack of his mother's delicious meatloaf sandwiches. He had little to say on the subject of his runaway tribute. Finally, Tigress came without the grand mam, who'd remained home to rest but had sent a cleaned uniform for him to wear on discharge. If there were cameras, she wanted him to look his best. They split the sandwiches, and then Tigress stroked his aching head until he dozed off, just as she had when headaches plagued him as a child. When someone awakened him in the wee hours of Tuesday, he supposed a nurse had come to check his vital signs, then started at the sight of Clemencia's ravaged face above his. The snake venom, or the antidote perhaps, had left her golden brown skin peeling, and the whites of her eyes the color of egg yolks. But much worse was the twitching that affected her entire body, causing her face to grimace, her tongue to jut periodically from her mouth, and her hands to jerk away even as they reached for his.
"Shh," she hissed. "I shouldn't be here. Don't tell them I came. But what are they saying?
Why has no one come to see me? Do my parents know what happened? Do they think I'm dead?
Groggy from sleep and medication, Coriolanus couldn't quite wrap his mind around what she was saying. Your parents? But they've been here. I saw them.
No! No one has seen me,
she cried.
I have to get out of here, Corio. I'm afraid she's going to kill me. It's not safe. We're not safe.
What? Who's going to kill you? You're not talking sense, he said.
Dr. Gall, of course.
She clutched his arm, awakening his burns.
You know, you were there.
Coriolanus tried to free her fingers. You need to go back to your room. You're sick, Clemmy. It's the snake bites. They're making you imagine things.
Did I imagine this?
She ripped back the opening of her hospital gown to reveal a patch of skin that extended over her chest and down one shoulder. Mottled with bright blue, pink, and yellow scales, it had the reptilian quality of the snakes in the tank. When he gasped, she shrieked.
And it's spreading! It's spreading!
Two of the hospital staff had her then, lifting her up and carrying her from the room. He lay awake the rest of the night thinking of the snakes and her skin, and the glass cases of Avoxes with their gruesome animal modifications in Dr. Gall's lab. Is that where Clemencia was headed? If not, why hadn't her parents seen her? Why did no one except him seem to know what had happened? If Clemencia died, would he disappear as well? The only witness? Had he put Tigris at risk by telling her the story? The pleasant cocoon of the hospital now seemed an insidious trap shrinking to suffocate him. No one checked in on him as the hours crept by, which added to his distress. Finally, just as dawn was breaking, Dr. Wayne appeared by his bedside. I hear Clemencia visited you last night, he said cheerfully. Did she give you a scare? A bit, Coriolanus tried to appear nonchalant. She'll be all right. The venom causes a lot of unusual side effects as it works itself out of the system. That's why we haven't let her parents see her. They think she's quarantined with a highly contagious flu. She'll be presentable in a day or two, the doctor told him. You can go visit her if you're up to it. Might cheer her up. All right, said Coriolanus, slightly reassured. But he could not unsee what he'd seen, not at the hospital and not at the lab. The removal of the morphling drip brought all the fuzzy edges into sharp relief. His suspicions tainted every comfort, from the large breakfast of hotcakes and bacon, to the basket of fresh fruit and sweets from the academy, to the news that his performance of the anthem would be replayed for the ring's funeral, as both a mark of its quality and a nod to his own sacrifices. The pre-funeral coverage started at 7, and by 9 the student body again filled the stairs in front of the academy. Just over a week ago, he'd felt he was falling into insignificance with his District 12 girl assignment, and now he was being honored for his courage in front of the entire nation. He'd expected them to show a tape of him singing, but instead, his holographic self appeared behind the podium. And while it was a little watery at first, it settled into a clean, crisp image. People were always saying he resembled his handsome father more every day, but for the first time he could really see it. Not just the eyes, but the jawline, the hair, the proud carriage. And Lucy Gray was right. His voice did have real authority. Overall, the performance was quite impressive. The Capitol doubled the efforts made for Arachne's funeral, which Coriolanus felt appropriate for the twins. More speeches, more peacekeepers, more banners. He didn't mind seeing the twins praised, even extravagantly, and wished they somehow could have known his hologram had opened the event. The dead tribute count had escalated, with the two tributes from District 9 having died from their injuries. Apparently, the veterinarian had done her best, but her repeated requests to admit them to the hospital had been refused. Their scarred bodies, along with what remained of the District 6 tributes, were draped over the backs of horses and paraded down Scholars Road. The two tributes from District 1 and the girl from District 2
as befitting their cowardly escape attempt, were dragged behind them. Then came a pair of those caged trucks Coriolanus had ridden in on his way to the zoo, one for the boys and one for the girls. He strained to see Lucy Gray but couldn't locate her, which added to his worries. Was she lying inert on the floor, overcome by injuries and hunger? As the twins' matching silver coffins came into focus, all he could think of was this silly game they'd made up on the playground during the war called Ring Around the Rings. The rest of the kids would chase down Dee Dee and Paolo and then grab hands, forming a circle around them and trapping them. It always ended with a whole lot of them, rings included, laughing their heads off in a heap on the ground. Oh, to be seven again, in a happy pile with his friends, with nutritional crackers waiting at his desk. After lunch, Dr. Wayne said he could be released if he promised to stay calm and get bed rest. And as the charms of the hospital had diminished, he changed into his clean uniform at once. Tigress collected him and accompanied him home on the trolley, but then had to return to work. Both he and the grandmam spent the afternoon napping, and he awoke to a nice casserole Sejanus's ma had sent over. At Tigress's urging, he went to bed with the sun, but sleep eluded him. Every time he closed his eyes, he'd see the flames all around, feel the trembling of the earth, smell the choking black smoke. Lucy Gray had been nibbling around the edges of his thoughts, but now he could think of no one else. How was she? Healing and fed, or suffering and starving in that awful monkey house? While he had been lying in the air-conditioned hospital with his morphling drip, had the veterinarian attended to her hands? Had the smoke damaged that remarkable voice? In helping him, had she ruined her chances for sponsors in the arena? He felt some embarrassment when he thought of his terror under the beam, but even more so when he remembered what had followed. On Capital TV, the coverage they'd shown of the bombing had been obscured by the smoke, but did it exist? Footage of her rescuing him, and much worse, of him clinging to her ruffled skirt as they waited for help to come? His hand fumbled in the drawer of his nightstand and found his mother's compact. As he inhaled the rose-scented powder, his thoughts quieted a bit, but restlessness drove him from his bed. For the next few hours, he wandered the apartment, looking out at the night sky, down at the Corso, into the neighbor's windows across the way. At some point, he found himself up on the roof amid the grandmam's roses and didn't remember having climbed the stairs to the garden. The fresh night air perfumed by the flowers helped, but soon brought on a bout of shivering that made everything hurt again. Tigress found him sitting in the kitchen a few hours before dawn. She made tea, and they ate the remainder of the casserole straight from the pan. The savory layers of meat, potato, and cheese consoled him, as did Tigress's gentle reminder that the situation with Lucy Gray was not of his making. They were both, after all, still children whose lives were dictated by powers above them. Somewhat comforted, he managed to doze for a few hours before a phone call from Citeria woke him. She encouraged him to attend school that morning if he could manage. Another mentor tribute meeting had been scheduled with the idea of working toward the interviews, which would now be on a completely voluntary basis. Later at the academy, as he looked down from the balcony into Heavensby Hall, the empty chairs rattled him. He knew in his head that eight tributes had died, that one was missing, but he'd not envisioned how that would ripple through the pattern of the 24 little tables, leaving a jagged, disconcerting mess. No tributes at all from districts 1, 2, 6, or 9, and only one from 10. Most of the kids who remained were injured, and all looked unwell. As the mentors joined their assignees, the losses became even more pronounced. Six mentors were either dead or hospitalized, and those partnered with the escapees of Districts 1 and 2 had no tributes at their tables and therefore no reason to show up. Livia Cardew had been vocal about this turn of events, demanding new tributes be brought from the districts, or at least that she be given Reaper, the boy assigned to Clemencia, who everyone thought had been hospitalized with the flu. Her wishes had not been accommodated, and Reaper sat alone at his table, a bandage stained with rusty dried blood wrapped around his head. As Coriolanus took the seat opposite her, Lucy Gray didn't even attempt a smile. A ragged cough racked her chest, and soot from the fire still clung to her clothing. The veterinarian had exceeded Coriolanus's expectations, though, as the skin on her hands was healing nicely. "Hi," he said, scooting a nut butter sandwich and two of Soteria's cookies across the table.
"Hey,"
she said hoarsely. Any attempt at flirtation or even camaraderie had been abandoned. She patted the sandwich but seemed too tired to eat it.
"Thanks."
"No, thank you for saving my life." He said it lightly, but as he gazed into her eyes, the levity leached away.
"Is that what you're telling people?" she asked. "That I saved your life?"
He had said as much to Tigris and the Grandmam, and then, perhaps unsure what to do with the information, let it drift from his thoughts like a dream. Now, with the empty seats of the fallen around them, the memory of how she'd rescued him in the arena demanded his attention, and he could not ignore its significance. If Lucy Gray had not helped him, he would be utterly, irrevocably dead. Another shiny coffin dripping flowers. Another empty chair. When he spoke again, the words caught in his throat before he forced them out. "I told my family. Really. Thank you, Lucy Gray."
"Well, I had some time on my hands," she said, tracing the frosted flower on a cookie with a shaky forefinger. "Pretty cookies."
Then came confusion. If she had saved his life, he owed her what? A sandwich and two cookies? That was how he was repaying her, for his life, which apparently he held quite cheaply. The truth was, he owed her everything. He felt the blush burn over his cheeks.
"You could have run.
And if you had, I would have gone up in flames before they reached me."
"Run, huh? Seemed like a lot of effort to get shot," she said.
Coriolanus shook his head. "You can joke, but it won't change what you did for me. I hope I can repay you in some way."
"I hope so too," she said.
In those few words, he sensed a shift in their dynamic. As her mentor, he'd been the gracious giver of gifts, always to be met with gratitude. Now she'd upended things by giving him a gift beyond compare. On the surface, everything looked the same. Chained girl, boy offering food, peacekeepers guarding that status quo. But deep down, things could never be the same between them. He would always be in her debt. She had the right to demand things. "I don't know how," he admitted. Lucy Gray glanced around the room, ticking in her wounded competitors. Then she looked him in the eye, and impatience tinged her voice.
"You could start by thinking I can actually win."